Wendy.
Yeah.
Am I saying your name correctly?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Approximately correctly.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Wendy and Dhananjay will lead us up. I think we have a lot of material.
Yeah.
So we will just, I don't know whether you want to complete your presentation, whether you'd like to pause and discuss particular points. It's up to you.
Well, I prefer to pause and discuss some questions.
Okay, let's do that.
Okay. In this presentation, I will mainly focus on some of the questions that I found which confuses me a lot while reading the text of Aristotle's discussion of justice by nature and justice by convention. I might not be able to answer those questions that I raised, and I think after my presentation, Dhananjay will give another presentation which will answer some of my questions here. So that's a sort of a cooperation, I think. I think it's a great idea. And my question mainly focuses on Aristotle's discussion of justice by nature and justice by convention from Nicomachean Ethics, Book 5, Chapter 7. And now let's get started. Have a look at the thesis. I call it T0. Aristotle says one part of political justice is natural and the other part legal. And here we might have some questions about what is political justice and how political justice can be natural. And according to Aristotle, political justice is justice between people who share a communal life with a view to self-sufficiency and are free and equal, either proportionally or arithmetically, and who are subject to law. And according to this remarks of political justice, it actually has some qualifications on political justice. One qualification is that political justice is subjected to law, and another qualification is political justice is between people who are not slaves and not justice within a domestic affairs. And now, as opposed to political justice, there is also justice among husband and wife, father and children, master and slaves, which is not among those who are naturally subject to law. That's my understanding, probably is wrong. And here, Aristotle admits both justice by nature and justice by law is in the area of political field. So because of these very short introduction of Aristotle's view of political justice and justice by nature and justice by convention, I have the following four questions. The first question is, how can political justice be natural beyond what is just by legal? On the grounds that political justice requires those who are in relation of justice must also be subject to law. And the second question is, what's the distinction between justice by nature and justice by law and by convention? The third question is, does Aristotle take a normative view about natural political justice? I did not answer this question, but I will give some remarks on the third question. The quick answer is, I think Aristotle does give us a normative view about natural political justice. And the last question is, if he does, what is the root of naturalness of political science? I also give a very brief remarks on this question. Now, let's have a look at some of the objections to, there exists some sort of justice that is by nature. And these objections, actually, we can see many places. Some of them are from Aristotle's own account, and some others probably can date back to not Plato's view, but the view Plato also argues against in his dialogues from the Republic and Gorgias. And now let's have a look at the first objection, which is from Nicomachean Ethics, Book 1, Chapter 3. It says, now fine and just things which political exams differ and vary so much as to seem to rest on convention only, not on nature. And the second objection is from a passage, Nicomachean Ethics, Book 5, Chapter 7, at the beginning. So the natural justice has the same validity everywhere alike, not by its seeming or not so. The legal justice originally makes no difference whether it is done one way or another, but makes a difference whenever people have laid down the rule. Now, some people think everything just is like this, merely legal, for the natural is unchangeable and equally valid everywhere. Fire, for instance, burns both here and in Persia, whereas they see that just changes from city to city. And here the objection is mainly that Everything that is by nature is valid everywhere and does not change. And here, the paradigmatic example is natural stuff like fire and wood, which is the same everywhere. But this is the basic objections to the view that justice is by nature, or justice can be by nature. So I'm gonna stop here a little bit. If you have any questions, you can just ask. Yeah.
Against the view, but then he qualifies it later when he says that even natural justice is not changeable.
Yes, yeah.
So, which was a very puzzling thing.
Yeah. I don't think this is Aristotle's own view. I think this is the view from some of his opposers' view.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And still, I think as far as fire goes, Aristotle would also give some sort of response that even though fire by nature goes upward, but sometimes we can change fire a little bit, but the change is not by nature, but by force, by some sort of other things. Yeah.
One perhaps tendentious way of putting the point is that in this text as a whole, we're kind of getting the distinction between first nature and second nature, to borrow much later ways of describing this, that insofar as we're talking about the political community as something natural, and political justice is natural within it, we're not talking about the nature as origin sense, the sense of phusis where it refers to our natural capacities.
Yes, I think that's one of Aristotle's response to appeal to second nature as political naturalness, not the first nature. And also, I think this is Krauss' view, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
he says there's no unqualified justice in relation to what is one's own. And there's this interesting discussion about justice towards children before they become separate, right?
Yeah.
I don't know whether you're going to talk about that later.
No, I will not talk about it later. But
he says there's no justice, doesn't exist there.
I think there is a similarity between justice between father and children to justice between slaves and masters. And Aristotle seems like he have a point that before children become an adult and become independent, children are just like slaves. It's the positions of the father. So there is no just relation between an agent and his possessing, so.
That can't quite be right, because in Politics 1, he says that the relationship between father and children is like monarchic rule, and he distinguishes that from despotic rule. So, I mean, one perspective is how separate are children from their fathers in Aristotle's conception? It's like not entirely separate, right? But he defines the slave as wholly the master's own. That's what it is to be a slave, is to be the kind of person who's holding his masters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that can't be the choice.
Suppose the difference is if you have a son, then the ideal is that he will grow up to become free and equal with other citizens.
I don't think Aristotle fully grapples with that, though.
You know,
there's got to be this, obviously, this developmental process, but then he sort of treats childhood as like a single state, which is kind of puzzling, which would you'd get a sort of transition at some defined age, which is kind of awkward. It should be a developmental process.
Yeah, I mean, he does say that one's child until it's old enough and separated is as though it were a part of oneself.
Mm.
Now, nobody decides to harm himself, hence there's no injustice in relation to them, and so nothing politically unjust or just either. And that seems, that almost, that's a stronger position.
Yeah.
There's no injustice, and therefore no politically, nothing that's politically just or unjust.
I think this might have to do something with suffering injustice and doing injustice. For example, if we are taking our slaves and children as our possessions, it seems like that, when we're doing injustice to them, we're also actually suffering injustice. And this is quite not plausible according to Aristotle's view, because later he talks about, can we do injustice to ourselves?
And he
gives an active answer.
Yeah.
You can harm yourself. Maybe that's enough to recover some of our intuitions, right? You can harm the child, and it might be unjust according to general justice to harm your child, but you're not going to politically wrong them. I mean, I think the positive case is easier to understand. Like, distributive justice doesn't exist in the household. That seems right. it seems odd to think that. We're separate enough that the allocations would be like, you get some, you know, allotment of honor or economic goods, and I get some other allotment. And then if you think, well, to be politically unjust is to either violate distributive or corrective justice, what would a violation of distributive justice look like in the household? I don't accord you enough honor?
Well, it's just
goods.
So that's where the approximation comes in. So I think there are going to be these analogies, but it's not going to be the substance of political life to regard my other family members as demanding from their equal and free status a certain sense of allocation or
respect. So I guess this would be
respect.
Similar as far as you should accord each person their worth.
Yeah.
But the worth there would be very different and perhaps would even the same.
Yeah, not political.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I'd say,
or actually,
more like intention. Like, that was one of like, obviously, a big sort of feminist demand, wasn't it? That, like, that's always political. That's kind of like what they were saying.
Yeah, that's, you know, so the criticism that Susan Muller-Oken levels against, like, Rawlsian liberals for treating individuals, you know, not considering their family relations, that misses the kinds of injustice that happen in the family that are not sort of political or economic. I think that same criticism applies very much to Aristotle. That, but the difference is that he doesn't have a conception of the state. So I think this is part of that difference is coming into view, right? The political justice is about our relations to each other as citizens.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a state, now a state needs to be concerned with everyone, citizen or not, or full citizen or not, whatever we want to say about children and women in Aristotle. So I think that's partly where this weirdness comes in.
It's quite interesting in relation to recent development, not that we should get lost in the political discussions, but the leak of the report from the Supreme Court, where some people claim that there's an issue about the enslavement actually being arising from this idea that some citizens have a duty to provide for other citizens in a way that Aristotle, and it seems that he would quite clearly say, well, not that the child is part of the father initially before it's born, but that he just is a part of the father, but he'd rather say, you know, there's a different kind of relation of justice between the unborn or the fetus and mother than what you have between individual citizens. And part of the problem with law in that area is that it's predicated on this kind of liberal conception of personhood, which doesn't.
No, but I think this idea of the separateness of persons, you know, it's supposed to set a floor. It's supposed to make sure that you don't treat anyone as lacking rights who who might need to be regarded as having rights because they haven't achieved some kind of status in society. To that extent, it's an improvement over the bad old theory of Aristotle,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
But the flip side of it is that it levels.
Yeah.
It sort of makes it it makes it categorical in a way that doesn't track our moral intuitions. Mm-hmm. I think that's incredibly relevant to this because the stuff about equality and worth, I think offends our sensibilities because of the consequences that Aristotle draws from it. But it might actually be structurally a better theory to account for some of our moral life.
This is
not correct, right? Well, this is what Martha thinks. I mean, Martha has some things, so.
I should say, Martha Nussbaum has done the Jason Ross.
Occasionally, I will channel her views.
I remember the first time I went to teacher, instead of whiting, referred to Robert Nozick as Bob. Oh my God, to be a musician,
Bob. No, it's just instinctive. It's just instinctive. It's,
yeah.
it only applies to your advisor, no one else.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, and I think another difference between political justice and domestic justice is that political justice requires that the people are in a self-sufficiency community, mm-hmm. whereas the domestic stuff is not self-sufficiency.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is also a very important distinction.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, shall we move on? And the third objection is actually from Glaucon, and yesterday Dana Jane, when we were discussing, he suggested me to not cover too much on Glaucon because it's a big issue. Yeah, I would like to show some of the points that I made from Glaucon's. Actually, it's not Glaucon's own view, it's Glaucon depicting some other view who is going to against Socrates in the Republic. The first point I would like to make is, according to some sort of Glaucon's view, doing injustice is by nature good and suffering injustice is by nature bad. Justice by nature is suffering injustice and is bad. And this is very different from Aristotle's view, especially the third point. And the fourth point is justice by convention is neither suffering justice nor doing injustice and hence is neither by nature good or bad. So later I will show some of Aristotle's responses to these objections, and Aristotle's strategy for responding to these objections is to argue against the thesis that being unchangeable is a necessary condition for being by nature. According to him, even things by nature can in fact be changeable. So let's have a look at the test. But among us, while there is such a thing as what is by nature, everything is changeable all the same. Nonetheless, we do find here what is by nature and what is not by nature, but of the things that admit of being otherwise, it is clear what sort are by nature and what sort are not by nature, but rather legal and by agreement. If indeed both are similarly changeable, and the same distinction will apply in other cases, for the right hand is by nature stronger, and even though it is possible for everyone to become ambidextrous. So the second evidence is from T22, which is from Mega Memoria. Among such things, some are by nature, others by law, and one must not suppose them to be so in such a way that they could never change, for even the things that are the way they are by nature participate in change. I mean, for example, that if all of us always practice throwing with the left hand, we would become ambidextrous, yet by nature it is the right hand, and the things on the right are nonetheless by nature better than the left, even if we do everything with the left just as we do with the right. Nor because these things change is it the case that because of it they are not so by nature. So in T21, Aristotle argues that natural justice is also changeable because just things admit of being otherwise, and admitting being otherwise is one of the features of things in human affairs. Since political justice are of human affairs and natural justice is one part of political justice, so it also admits of being otherwise. Hence, natural justice is also subject to change as well. And I think this is a very important point from Aristotle. He thinks that it is not necessarily that things, even by nature, is not subject to change. And just like the example he gives by our using our right hand and left hand, is actually using our right hand is some sort of by nature, but we can also use our left hand as well as using our right hand. That's one of Aristotle's response. And another point I think is admitting of being otherwise. This has a very important contrast with political life, because Aristotle here does not talking about justice within God, and for things within God probably is not admit does not admit of being otherwise. It's always necessary, especially for things above the moon world, the heavenly bodies. They are necessary, and probably there was some sort of justice within heavenly bodies and within God, but by political justice, Aristotle does not have that sort of aspect of justice within necessary things. And so I think probably Aristotle is taking a word necessity with different meanings, and I think one meaning is a very strong necessity. A necessity is sort of thing that cannot be otherwise, and everywhere is always the same. But when people are talking about justice, and especially that justice varies from place to place, they are not talking about that sort of strict necessity, but talking about something always be the same. So I don't think that Aristotle is actually giving the examples of being otherwise is very successful in responding to those objections. But later on, I think Aristotle gives some other kind of responses to the questions, not in terms of admitting of being otherwise, but in terms of, is in terms of his own account of what natural justice is rooted in. So, I would like to stop here, and do you have any questions?
I mean, there seems to have circumstantial factors in mind, right? When he says that, what's generous or what's just and so on will depend on the circumstances in which you find yourself. And so the kind of generalization, the kind of accounts of these virtues that have been given the ethics will hold for the most part, given that there will be exceptions to most action-guiding rules, certainly. So I wonder how high up that kind of variation goes according to Aristotle, because of course the kinds of truths that he's, the kinds of principles he's trying to establish in the politics and the Nicomachean ethics, there's a question about whether only the highest kinds of principles in the practical sphere are exceptionless, and whether anything beneath sort of a kind of formal specification of the happy life or formal specification of what a political community is and what it's for will be open to variations depending on circumstance. I mean, it's just a question, and then we may be able to answer it better as we go on.
Yeah.
The two examples that he cites in the passage, right, are courage and wealth. Sometimes courage and sometimes wealth have ruined people. And I take it that eventually he's going to divide those two from each other and accept that wealth is among the things that people naturally pursue but need to be good for a person in an unqualified way. But I think the courage is going to turn out to be good unqualifiedly.
Yeah, because it looks a little bit strange to say, well, courage sometimes leads to people's ruin.
I think this must be a kind of standard. It has the feel of a standard topos. It's like this is a commonplace argument that gets cited.
Yeah.
Along the lines of things we find in the particular. Pythagoras and the Euthydemus, like a sophistic argument. Maybe
yeah,
it was
yeah.
had more popular currency than that as well. But.
Yeah. So you accept the part of the observation, which will help us accept the
usual
world
and the natural document. Exactly, yeah. That's always been my thought about that.
Yeah. I think the passage from Nicomachean and Ethics book one, chapter three. Aristotle is raising this objection. He is trying to argue that when we're doing ethics or political science, we should not looking for the preciseness as mathematicians does, but the preciseness that is fit for the investigation of ethics and political science. And he just gives this example is to argue that to some people that from what I understood is that there is no natural good and all goods are by convention because people the good to people is different from one another, and that is an some sort of evidence for the view that good. There is no natural good because you have your own good, that some good is relative to you and also some good is relative to another person. And so in the case of just things, it also the same rests on convention only, not on nature. And I think later on I will also ask some questions about what Aristotle means when he says that good without qualification or just without qualification. And to my understanding, that when he says something without qualification, haplos, he's talking about something probably in general it is the case, but in some very specific situation, it might not be the case. So that's my understanding.
No.
I'm not sure.
No,
you don't think so, right?
Haplos is tricky this way. There's a book that's going to come out in a couple of years about Aristotle's use of terms like haplos in the ethics and politics specifically. It's kind of lexical study of key concepts, mostly concepts like politeia and so on, how they're actually used differently. Politeia is used differently in the ethics and politics, is one of the things I learned from this manuscript. But but haplos is always contrasted with some relative phrase.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that it's in general, it's actually what it says, without qualification. So not in relation to something. And what's tricky about that is that you can have, because you can have different levels of relativity, it could be still true that something is unqualifiedly good for human beings, for instance, right? So our sense of relation is going to consider that relational. But I think it's the difference between when he uses it about goods or just things or terms like that, usually the contrast is with things that are unqualifiedly good for a person or not. So that's the use, and I think it's in 5.2 when he's talking about what kinds of good things justice.
Yes,
concerns.
Yes, yeah.
He uses the
5.1.
5.1. Okay,
yeah, 5.1.
He spells it out there. 1129b1 and following.
I mean, I think there are specific cases where it has the sense of in general, in these particular circumstances.
Yes.
So in the discussion of mixed acts, for instance.
Right. Yeah. But when it's collocated with agathon.
Yeah, I think
this is a narrower use.
Yeah, actually, you can have a look at my page 5. The first question that I raised is about absolutely or without qualification to haplos, agathon. And I think here, I have two cases. One case is from Aristotle's discussion about akousia, voluntary action, and he was talking about mixed action in which we're on the ship actually encountering some very big storm. And Aristotle says, haplos akousia, we would not throw our shippings off the board. So, but in that specific case, we would throw those shippings off the board voluntarily. But without qualification, it is involuntarily. So it seems like by without qualification, we would not overthrow our shippings. It's very natural for us because...
So I think that that falls under the, I'm sorry, my mind always goes to the Latin. I think that's a secundum quid contrast.
Uh-huh.
So it's in relation to a specific end. Right. That's the right.
Mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm.
a form of relativity for action. So
mm-hmm.
I think that case can be assimilated. I wasn't trying to say every single use of Hoplos,
mm-hmm.
but in this predicative use, Hoplos agathon. I mean, I think the 5:1 passage is really the useful one because he adds IA, so that Hoplos can't contain the meaning of IA there.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is itself interesting.
And he also talks about that pleasure is good, haplos. It means it's good without a qualification.
Mm-hmm.
But in some cases, pleasure is not good. And also, when he talks about wealth, he also gives this sort of qualification.
Yeah.
So you think this qualification is for when we're saying that pleasure is good, hapless. So it means that pleasure is not in relation to some other things, it is good. But when pleasure is related to some sort of agent, it might be not good, might be bad.
Well, I think it's always going to be related to an agent, that's always going to be related to an activity, but it's the assessment of whether it's it's always I'll put it this way, it's always a perfection of something, but perfections of bad things are bad. So if you take enjoyment in a bad activity, the pleasure is as bad as the bad activity is, or well, it's certainly equally bad. Equally, it is bad.
Uh-huh. So you seem to me to think that pleasure here is not as basic as activities are, even though it is a completion of activity or the actualization of just activity. I mean, there is a controversy between on the ontological status of pleasure, right?
Which I tried to stay out of. I try to stick to axiology only.
Yeah, but when we say that hoplos is in generally so-and-so, I do not think that is in contradictory with your suggestion.
No, I think that's right. Yeah.
Right?
I think, but in a way, it's a little vaguer than what Aristotle tends to mean.
Okay.
It tends to mean this more specific thing. Simpliciter, right? That's
mm-hmm,
why that's
mm-hmm.
why Latin translation is more illuminating. Anyway. Sorry, didn't mean to derail us on this.
Whose book are you alluding to?
It's by Mulhern. John Mulhern, who's an independent scholar, teaches at the University of Pennsylvania. Yeah, I think it's the fruit of a long lexicographical study of these texts.
Wow.
I don't think all the analyses are apposite, but I think the collection of evidence is very useful. It's more useful than Bonnets, certainly. So, yeah. It's, like it's an updated version of Bonnets for the key terms of the ethics and politics.
Yeah. Mm. So now let's have a look at the third T23. The sorts of things that are just by being in accord with convention and what is advantageous, however, are like measures. Similarly, two things that are not naturally just are merely by human are also not the same everywhere. For constitutions are not the same everywhere, although only one is in accord with nature, best everywhere. So here, Aristotle is trying to give his own answer to whether we can have some sort of justice by nature. And there is one common aspect of justice by nature and justice by convention. It seems that they both varies everywhere, but Aristotle gives a negative remarks about justice by nature varies. But I think this the point raised here in 2:3 is some sort of in contradiction with the point he raises in 2:1 and 2:2. Because in 2:1 and 2:2, Aristotle admits that actually even the things by nature can vary. But here in 2:3, he kind of think that the best, the natural justice is always the same and do not change. And here, And I think Aristotle here seems to give us some hints on how we can answer the first question raised in the introduction as to how political justice can be natural, even though it is subject to law. Even if constitutions vary from city to city, there is one best constitution which might not be enacted in some specific place, and this best constitution is in accord with nature. Just as in accord with the best constitution is justice by nature. It seems that when Aristotle characterizes the best political constitution, he makes reference to natural justice. Natural justice is the standard to which other kinds of legal justice should appeal. The constitution that is in accord with natural justice is aristocracy, in which good citizens are the same as good human beings. This implies that Aristotle's account of natural justice is rooted in his account of human beings. And here is account of the best constitution. In 4.2.4, Aristotle says, the only aristocracy, rightly so-called, is the constitution consisting of the best men absolutely, not of men good on some assumption. There only are the good man and good citizen absolutely the same. Elsewhere, the good are good relatively to their own constitution. So it seems to me that the 2.4 test tells us that natural justice does not vary from constitutions to constitutions. So here I have some questions and comments of test 2.4. And the first question I think we've already discussed, and let's look at the second one is a comment. So text 2.4 seems to imply that a natural good man might not be a good citizen in some political constitutions. So if this is so, there might always be a conflict or at least a deviation between natural justice and legal justice in those political constitutions that are not the best. And I think this point might be very important in terms of how one can have a good life in a political constitution. For example, if we say that a good human being is, if happiness consists in being good human being, and probably it seems that in some political constitution, even though we can be a good human, we can be good human beings, but we can always have some sort of conflict with the external political community. So I think if that is the case, could we still count the person who is good really happy at all? Just like the objection raised by Glaucon to Socrates, where the perfect just person actually have all the perfect stuff required by being just, but is has been get rid of all his external goods. I mean, especially the goods that can be gotten from political community. So in this case, probably, I don't know what Aristotle would think about probably Aristotle would think they are not happy, even though they are good human beings. So that is the point that I would like to raise. And the third point is, best political constitution is the one that can make good citizen and good man the same. And a good citizen, I think, should be understood as just citizen in the sense that the justice is the whole of virtue as opposed to a special virtue, that is, a specific part of the whole virtue. On this view, only in this way, justice by convention is the same as justice by nature. So here, I think Aristotle answers the question how justice can be by nature, even though natural justice is subject to law, because he is trying to find out a very specific law, a specific constitution, which is actually based on what Aristotle would call nature. And this nature, in turn, is based on Aristotle's account of human nature. To be specific, I think, is we can get Aristotle's view from his function argument. That is, so that's my brief answer to the first question. Yeah, I would also like to stop here, and so we can discuss.
I mean, I suppose you could have an instance of a good man in a bad, under a bad constitution, if that person had been brought up well, but given that Aristotle thinks that a good upbringing presupposes being brought up under good laws, or at least he seems to think that's necessary to ensure that the whole citizen body ends up having virtues, it seems unlikely that someone who's raised in under a kind of constitution that deviates at least quite dramatically from the ideal. I mean, maybe if it approximates the ideal, it's a different matter, but if it deviates quite radically, then I think it would actually be skeptical about whether someone could develop the right kinds of virtues, i.e., the right kind of relationship to other citizens.
He's got an answer to that. He's got an answer to that in Ethics 10.9, where he suggests that legislative science emerges from lower level political science. It's actually our task to ascend to constitutional universals. Just go hang out with the political theorists. They're the divine people. But I think this point about the divine, or what he calls luck, fortune, and also in 10.9 and other places, is it does explain the exceptions, if there are exceptions, to the rare case of someone emerging from
Sort of blind luck in hitting on the right policy, so like at the end of the Mina, right?
Yeah. Or it just might be that because there's a kind of interaction between the public institutions and one's family life, you might have lucked into having the rare good education against the backdrop of generally bad laws.
Although Aristotle, at the end of the day, I think seems quite skeptical of the power of an individual father to prevail over his sons.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The father doesn't have the right kind of authority.
But there is affection. Affection does some of the work, and if there's a kind of overabundance of natural virtue, maybe that could be enough in some rare cases. I mean, I think it's enough that the question is raised by the possibility,
mm-hmm.
Even if it's not unlikely to be actualized.
Yeah, I mean, so if political community is a sort of requirement for acquire some sort of political virtues, it seems like Aristotle might be very pessimistic about individuals having happiness living in a bad regime. I mean, seems like it's not possible. In a sense, not plausible.
Mm-hmm. No, certainly not.
Mm-hmm. So the next one is justice by law or justice by legal. And here, test 3.1, each of the things that are legally just is like a universal in relation to particulars, or the things that are done in action are many, but each of the things that are legally just is one thing, for it is a universal. And actually T3.1 and T3.2 is both translations of the same passage, but they are, I mean, the emphases are different. Let's look at T3.2. Each type of just and lawful action is related as a universal to the corresponding particulars, for the actions that are done are many, but each type is one, since it is universal. So I actually have a question, because my Greek is not good. I mean, here it says, ton de dikaion kai nomino hekaston hosta kasolun prosta kas hekaston eke. Here, I don't know how to understand the kai here. Does the kai has these two different understandings, both from T31 and T32? T31 understand the kai as a conjunction of the same thing that is legal and that is just. So that's how he translated as things that are legally just, but T32 take kai as separately, talking about two different things, each things that are just and each things that are lawful. So my question is how
the kai could be explicative,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
Rather than additive. So it could just be modifying, like expanding on the first adjective, so to speak, which would then explain the adverbial translation.
Uh-huh.
So it's explaining dikaion.
As
i.e.
Ah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I guess that's what they're doing the first translation.
Ah.
Yeah, and which way we go is really going to depend on what we think is going on in the context. I'm reminded of a passage from 5.1 where we get the introduction of the idea that the unjust person is said in many ways, and likewise the just person will be said in many ways, and there we learn that the just person is nomimos and isos, and I can imagine this being sort of picking that idea back up. That's to say, he's reminding us that dikaios has got these two meanings, and so we need to explicate. To disambiguate general and particular justice from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that I think I prefer Reeve here. Or yes. Something
okay.
any translation that represents this as a henditis,
yeah,
seems good to me.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Erwin is thinking that these are two different things, because that would be translating ton de dikaion kai ton nomimon, I would think.
Yeah.
And hekasan would be a little strained. So I think Erwin is also thinking that it means the same thing as Reeve does. Just, there's just no ambiguity
uh-huh.
in Reeve because of the adverbial translation. So I actually think they agree about the meaning of the passage.
So just means legally just, right?
Yeah, or that is to say, it's just hyphen and hyphen lawful.
Okay.
Right, just in the sense of lawful. Just and lawful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think... My understanding is to think that in T31 or 32, Aristotle is talking about two different things, and one is justice. Justice in general and justice by law, or justice by, yeah. And the test that could support my understanding is from test 33. And in 33, Aristotle discusses both injustice by nature and injustice by constitutional arrangement. So I take that here is a parallel between dikaion justice and nomion is injustice by nature and injustice by constitutional arrangement that is that's toxic. So I will read through the passage 3.3. For what is unjust is so by nature or by constitutional arrangement, whereas the same thing, when done, is an unjust action, but before it was done, it was not yet one, but rather something unjust. Similarly with a just action, although here the common sort is more usually called a dikai or pragema, whereas it is the ratification of an unjust action that is called dikaioma. So and here, so that's my textual evidence to understand that Aristotle in T31 or 2 is talking about two things. One thing is justice by nature, or and the other thing is justice by law. So I think that
I think Deniger
I don't think it makes a huge difference. I think he could be making the point in T3-3 about these two ways of being unjust and be making a different point in the earlier passage. I mean, they're separated. This is a very desultory chapter in general. It moves from topic to topic.
Yes.
It's not very well organized. Mm-hmm. Actually, some people have tried moving the text. I think Jackson moved some of the text around this chapter for that reason. I'm inclined to be quite blasé about this and say they're making unrelated points.
Okay. So you think that the Kai here and the He and Er are not related, right? The ton de dikaion kai nominon hekaston and here adikon megar esti te fuse e taxe and here. So I think, I think there is a parallel between the kai and the air. So one further bit of
evidence is that very end of the passage, the first passage at A8 Katholugar is a very, very strong conclusion. Even though the next sentence begins with a de, which is a weak particle, I would actually amend that to day or something stronger. The little two word sentence that ends in gar is like about the most firm way of ending something you could manage.
Okay.
It's very strongly conclusive. So I think he's gotten to the end of the earlier topic, which is about what you were discussing earlier, this idea of there being a measure. And now he wants to say, well, okay, another issue is that wrongdoing and wrongs are distinct from each other. This is one of the chunks that I think Jackson just thinks belongs in 5-6. It's just a new topic altogether.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But that's my... I would put the chapter break after that. And put this off in... If I were a medieval, I would put it off in the margin. It's not part of the main line of the argument. I mean, he comes back to this in 5-8, of course.
Yeah. Yes.
With the theory of voluntary.
Yes, but concerning this passage, I also have a question. So what is the relation between the universal and its corresponding particulars that can be used as a model of relation between the things that are just and just actions or justice? I don't find out how... I have some misunderstanding of the word, of the phrase.
Think about a law. So a law describing that his example in the chapter is that the correct ransom for a prisoner is one mina. So it looks like the specificity there is more particular than the kinds of things you get from natural justice, like political office ought to be distributed according to merit. So the ransom for a prisoner ought to be one mina looks like a particular in a funny way. Also because it's an enactment of law on a given occasion, right? There was a particular decision made on a given occasion to make this the correct ransom. And so you might make a mistake about particular and universal, but actually it turns out these things are equally universal because an instance of ransoming or an instance of distributing political office, that action falls under one of these precepts, whether it's a natural precept like the thing about political office or a conventional precept like the thing about the ransom being exactly one mina. I think that's the point he's making.
Uh-huh. So you think even justice by law is in a sense universal, though sometimes it has a... prescription of particulars, right?
I think that's the point he's making in the text. Yeah.
Thanks.
It's why you might get confused about particulars and universals.
Yeah. And that fits well with his discussion of equity. Where he says that all law needs to be general or universal, and that's why it will be erroneous in cases.
He does think that some things that purport to be laws are actually sophismata.
Mm-hmm.
And so he does want to have this category for something that has the pretense of universality, but in fact is just
a decree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that might also be looming in his. He doesn't want constitutional arrangements that turn out to just be like one big conjunctive decree. No. It's universal. It governs our activities over time and is a measure and so on.
And that's of course what makes laws useful.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I think this is his way of navigating like a uber conventionalism and uber naturalism. He's trying to go through the middle ground and say the politically just is both natural and conventional.
Yes. Well, now let's move on to our last point. It's about Aristotle's response to Glaucon. And I see there are similarities between Aristotle and Glaucon and also differences between them. Aristotle agrees with Glaucon that justice is neither doing injustice nor suffering injustice, but his account of justice is not of a compromise but of a mean between two extremes. Different from Glaucon, Aristotle thinks that doing injustice is not good but rather bad because it is on the other extreme of the mean. And here is a textual evidence, text 4.1, and with these defined, it is clear that just action is a mean between doing injustice and suffering injustice, for the one involves having too much and the other having too little. Justice is something medial, not in the same way as other virtues, because it is productive of mean, whereas injustice is so of the extremes. Also, justice is the state in accord with which the just person is set to do action, what is just, and to do so in accord with his deliberative choice, and to allocate things, whether to himself and another or to two other people, not in such a way that too much of what is choiceworthy goes to him and too little to his neighbor, and the reverse is with what is harmful, but rather the proportionally equal amount of both, and similarly where the allocation is to two or other people. And here, actually, I also have some questions and comments, and the first question is, when Aristotle defines justice as mean, namely not having too much or nor having too little, does he mean justice by nature or justice by convention? By raising this question, because I think his definition of justice does not differ too much from Glaucon's account, but Glaucon explains that this sort of justice, not having too much nor having too little, is conventional justice, not justice by nature. So I don't know whether Aristotle agrees with Glaucon on this point. It is just justice by convention, not justice by nature. And here I have the second question. If Aristotle thinks that justice as a mean between doing injustice and suffering injustice is natural justice, what could his argument be? And I give three tentative answers to this question. The first one is, not having more nor having less is a reciprocal principle that is necessary for forming an exchange community or political community in general. And because man is by nature a political animal, therefore not having more or having less is rooted in human nature. This is how justice as a mean between having too much and having too little is by nature. And sometimes can also be by convention if by accident that the convention is accords with the nature. So in that case, it is also by convention. And the last point is, why is being political animal part of human nature? And I take Krautpoint, he suggests that being political animal is our second nature in the sense that it is natural for us to monitor ourselves and to eliminate the rough spots in our character. Yeah. So, any questions?
I think I want to reject your question one, which sets up this whole discussion. I think he's just talking about what he's been talking about throughout, right? This text is from
Exchange
5.5.
Yeah, no.
But he's been talking about distributive and corrective justice in the previous chapters. And so I think he's just talking about particular justice, which involves both nature and convention.
Both nature and convention.
Mm-hmm. Because it involves a political community constituted for self-sufficiency, as he says in 5.6. And so it involves equality,
mm-hmm,
both
mm-hmm.
arithmetic and proportional.
Yeah. So, I mean, involves both convention and nature, right?
And in an inseparable way.
In a separable way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then you do not agree with my points in 3.1, 2.3, right? I mean,
yeah.
This comment on page 8.
Yeah, I think I disagree with him. But you'll find out more about
all right, all right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, should we just take a very brief break there? Thank you very much.
Thank you.